Hello and welcome to Board Stupid, the podcast that loves talking tabletop board games, D&D and other awesome stuff. I'm Wayne.
And I'm Simon.
We're just a couple of nerds talking about the things we love that are worth geeking out over. And we're going old school today, Simon. It's me and you talking about D&D.
We are fully back to the roots.
Back to our first episode?
I think so, yeah.
Pretty much. Which I think we tentatively titled Give me them half-orc wizards. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Absolutely right.
We're talking D&D character creation today.
We really are. We're talking D&D character creation, a few other related topics. And Simon, are you ready?
I got a cup of tea. I think I'm about as ready as I can be today.
I'm ready. And if you guys are ready, as we talked about, we're going to dig into the world of Dungeons & Dragons for the first time in a little while as we discuss a little bit of D&D news from Wizards of the Coast, fill you in our brand new campaign that we're starting, and our wider thoughts on the game, character creation, and other related topics since the first time we played together those many years ago.
Many. It feels like millennia.
Insert, was it jangly bells? Let's start a little bit with the fact that D&D is going to change a lot.
Yeah, the landscape's kind of ever evolving at the moment. There's a lot of playtest material, which, if I'm honest, I've scarcely looked at, certainly not played through. Somewhat jealous, I have to say, of those that have found time to really dive deep into all of these new options and really playtest them to the point they're giving feedback to Wizards.
Absolutely.
They've dubbed it 1D&D. Whether that remains the forever title, who knows? I think it's much like a project.
Probably a project name, because 5e at the time of when it was in that sort of same phase was dubbed D&D Next.
That's it, yeah.
So this is 1D&D, or such as it might be, 6E, we don't know.
They think, from what I've heard, they're looking to not really release anything as the next edition, so much as just have a progressive evolution, and Dungeons & Dragons is just whatever is existing at the time, with modifications and changes as required or requested by those that play it.
So more like a living product.
I think so, yeah. Rather than, you guys have been getting into Warhammer much more recently, and there's like, this is Codex 9, or...
every 4 years or so,
a very clear
new edition.
Break.
Yeah, that's right.
This is much more of an ongoing process, I think. So you can jump in at any point, and what you get is the game that everyone's playing, unless they're specifically choosing to play an older edition.
Yeah, it almost feels they've gone to a kind of software development model, right, in some ways, where you're rolling releases out every 6 months or something.
It does have that kind of feel, yeah. So it's really more the new season than a whole new standalone game. So it's, the latest patch release, as it were.
Yeah, that's right. There are some significant changes, some less significant changes, things like grouping the different classes into various, so I suppose, major types and changes to spells and all sorts. But we're going to dig into a proper breakdown on 1D&D in a future episode.
Yeah, there's a lot to cover in the 1D&D releases, the playtest, the Unearthed Arcana, whatever you want to call it, where they're kind of rebounding everything, they're realigning power sets. Because, people have said for a long time that with every new release, it's kind of a power creep. So anything from the player's handbook is kind of underpowered in retrospect. So 1D&D is looking to address that and kind of rebalance all of the classes. And as you say, they're kind of setting archetypes between the groups. So these are the marshals, these are the clerical, the different types of magic.
Into sort of four major groups of magic, which I quite like the sound of. Like, was it primal, arcane, divine, and some other one?
There may be one other. There's a whole... I think that has to be really its own standalone episode once we've maybe had a chance to actually sit down and play through some of it. But.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Simon, tell me, why didn't we use the chance of a brand new campaign to maybe play with some 1D&D stuff, do you think?
I think in part it's our group. We know what we know and we like what we know.
That's right.
And as much as we're open to experimentation, none of it's quite set in stone yet, for one. There's no officially published, this replaces everything, outside of it being a playtest type module. So while it's all being kind of literally playtested and they're taking feedback, they're doing regular surveys, seeing what people have liked and not liked. I know on the first set of 1D&D playtests, they had like the natural 20 always succeeds, the natural one always fails for everything. And a lot of people went, no, we don't like that. You know, the DM can no longer crit was another one. They're like, we don't think we like that kind of. I think there's too many variables in there that aren't set in stone, that haven't fully been ironed out, that maybe we want to stick with stuff that we've got in, like, well, for myself at least, in hard print. I've got the book in hand.
Yeah.
And I know kind of what I'm working with.
Yeah, we have a ton of existing material. And I think it's also important to note that each edition of D&D is a standalone thing, right? That you can always just carry on playing third edition or 3.5. Or if you want to, you can have a group that plays one edition or D&D Advanced, or you know what I mean? So
yeah, well, I think we've got friends in common that have stuck with some of the older editions, and absolutely fine, you know.
More power to you.
I think, at least for me, I find generally what I arrive at is the thing I tend to like more than anything else.
Yeah.
You know, you come into a band on their fourth album, you're possibly going to like that more than third album or second album, simply because it's the one you knew first and kind of fell in love with.
Yeah, of course.
I think maybe in the same way, I certainly started with fifth edition. I've got great respect for older editions as being the thing that created the thing I love, but I'm in no hurry to go backwards from them. But, you know, each to their own in that regard.
Absolutely. So that's a little bit on 1D&D. Stay tuned, I guess, for a full breakdown on some of the proposed changes and our thoughts on those in a future episode. Kind of related, there is a movie out. No spoilers for us because we haven't seen it yet, but we're seeing it soon. Yeah. Are you seeing it with us?
No, I don't think I can make the group session. I'm gonna have to go the next day so I can join in. So I'll be able to join in the discussion afterwards. But
yeah, there'll be spoilers abound otherwise.
Yeah.
So, but I've heard good things, like not a shit D&D movie, which is interesting.
Yeah, one of the reviews I heard that was as non-spoilery as you can get was, if you know nothing about it, it's a pretty good film. If you do know D&D, there's all those little extra hints in there. You go, actually, yeah, this is
nice little love letter to D&D in some ways.
I was tempted to watch the 2000 Thora Birch Jeremy Irons one again recently, having not seen it since release, but I don't think I can bring myself to.
No, don't make yourself sad. It's got who's he got in it? From the Crystal Mate. Richard O'Brien, isn't it? I think, in it.
Oh, was he one of the guys in it?
I think he's in it.
Oh, my goodness.
As like a cameo, I'm sure he's in it. Anyway.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It's a kind of ludicrous thing that would happen.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, quite.
But yeah, new movie is supposed to be pretty bang
pretty
on.
Pretty good. So, well, we're going to go check that out. Right. Let's dive into a little bit of our background on D&D. And for those who haven't gone back into the archive and listened to those early episodes and some of the other ones in between where we talked a lot about D&D, me and Simon have been playing together since 2019.
Yeah, very early 2019. I think maybe character creation back end of 2018.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, that's right. More like the November, December. Yeah, 2018.
I might have to find that message from the group that you sent where you very first suggested it. And me being fairly new to the modern age of board gaming with you at the time as well, went, is this something I might be interested in?
Yeah.
And then I was just like, dive fully. I haven't seen the surface since.
Yeah, literally, eyes just about peeking above the water, like drowning in D&D content.
So yeah, what are we now? March 2023, so solid 3 years.
Yeah, well, a solid 4 years is going to be this year.
Yeah,
so,
I can do that.
Yeah, good solid four and a bit. Yeah, it's amazing, really. So we began with the Lost Mines of Phandelver.
We did, yeah. You very kindly ran us through your interpretation of that classic module.
Yeah, I did a few twists on that classic module, which I think everyone should try. I mean, you know, if you're not comfortable changing anything, then just run the module as is. But I hadn't DM'd in like a decade or more, and I thought, you know what, sod it. I'm going to put a little twist on it and just do what I think sounds good to me.
And I think it worked perfectly well. And Yeah, it was one of the major takeaways, and would always be my recommendation to any budding DM, is not to slavishly follow any pre-written material, because, and for myself, I've just found it so damn hard to stick exactly to what someone else has said. If I have the idea of it and I go, okay, this is my interpretation of that, I can always revert back to my interpretation of it. I can think what I think on it. Whereas if it's something that doesn't quite feel right, I constantly have to recheck what the specific could be.
Absolutely.
And making those little personal touches, having a character linked to one of the major players of the NPCs or the big bad or whatever, I think was a great touch.
No, thank you. Yeah. Try and bring your players into the world, I guess, regardless of if you're playing fully homebrew or if you're playing a printed adventure. If you can connect the characters to the world in some way, I think it really enriches the experience. In our example, the big bad, the black spider in Lost Mines, we had as actually the estranged father of one of the characters, who didn't know it at the time, but all they told me about their character was that their father was estranged. So I thought, oh, let's use that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let me chuck that in there, and that was quite cool. We did a couple of other changes. I thought, it's not a D&D campaign if we don't start in a bar. So we started in a pub instead of on the road, so which was fun. And then, of course, loads of things happened that I didn't expect. And then the pub was set on fire and all sorts. It was wild stuff.
Yeah, that was a great first episode.
Yeah, it was a giggle. And it taught me a lot about the game. And it taught, I think, quite a lot of you folks who haven't played in a while or not at all.
Well, I was literally learning as we played, yeah. I was very much learning the mechanics as I went, learning what could be done, what couldn't be done, and the answer is pretty much anything you could think of could be done.
Yeah.
And I took that to heart very much so, and have tried to espouse that to everyone I play with when they are staring intently at their sheet and you think, what is it they're missing? And they're like, I want to do this. I'm like, just say you want to do that then.
Yeah.
The sheet comes second to me in my head now.
Yeah. So let's talk about that a little bit. Do you want to give us a little overview of your very first character?
My very first character was Walker, the Shadow Monk. He was a human, followed, I suppose, an almost inescapably obvious background in that he was not that he was an orphan, but didn't know his father ever and had been left by his mother to the local monastery simply because she couldn't look after him in the harsh winter, and then they moved on and lost ways with each other. I remember reading through all of the different character classes, and even in the player's handbook there's your 12 base classes plus all of the subclasses.
There is tons of
stuff. That's a lot to take in.
Yeah, I just want to quickly dive in there, Simon, before you continue. It's important for new players to recognise that you don't have to consume all of the content. If you've got experienced players saying, oh yeah, it's no good unless you use Tashas, or it's no good unless you use Xanatars, ignore that. I mean, you can do plenty with just the player's handbook. There is a ton of stuff in there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a later character, bar being a Goliath, which wasn't an original player's handbook race, I was just a totem barbarian.
There you go.
But my God, that was a fun character.
Absolutely. So yeah, you were saying.
Being a martial artist myself, as you are, Wayne, I was kind of drawn to more obviously combative stuff. In general, like the concept of being stealthy and not necessarily sneaky for sneaky sake, but more like the hitman style. I'm going to strike and move rather than just stand and bang in the middle of the ring type approach for my first character. I like that kind of fast moving hit from the shadows kind of style. Really had to find my feet as I was playing in terms of character. He was pretty characterless, I would say, for a good proportion. Not to say that I didn't engage with the story, but compared to any character I've made since, that it was more, I was learning the game, I was learning the mechanics, and I was kind of leaning into the subclass far more than I want him to be this person in the world.
I think that's entirely fair and probably quite common of new players, right, where the mechanisms of D&D are overwhelming. It is a big game and there are a lot of rules, and it's easy to just, well, let me lean on the features and mechanisms of my class, and the my character within the world is kind of a secondary thing, which I'll try and try and make the most of, but it's hard to do at the same time. And to be perfectly frank, it's a bit awkward at first. You know, it's awkward to try and, well, at least for me, it was awkward to try and be someone else in a role play setting.
Yeah,
right? It's not a comfortable thing for everyone.
I'd never done any role play game of any kind before. I'm not really of the acting bent as much as I did one of Ant's movies back in the day, a little short movie for a college project. That was a terrible American accent, which I've repeated since in other things just for the fun of it. But I wasn't really into the idea of, you know, I'm really going to embody this character and I'm going to portray him in any given specific way, I don't think, at the time. Mm. I had some background ideas in mind, I suppose. I wasn't necessarily particularly outgoing. I suppose later on, as the campaign progressed, I realised with a charisma score of 7 that I was never going to be the face of the party, so I may as well play into that.
Yeah.
Try to be relatively emotionless, I think, was one of the key things.
Kind of like the grey man.
Yeah, very
you know,
much so.
Just hidden in the background and just ready to attack. Yeah, and it was interesting as well, seeing how you've grown as a player in those 4 years and really starting to embody the characters that you create. And I very much like to try and do that as best as I can. I put on a silly voice and I try and think about the persona of who that person or creature would be in that world and how they might react in certain situations. And it's difficult to do at all times, but I think it's part of the fun to try and dive in. But it's not really essential to the game. We talked about it on an episode a while ago. You can third person roleplay your character just fine.
I remember us having that discussion. I couldn't remember which episode it was to point out the number for anyone who wants to go back and listen in more detail. But yeah, the silly voices, you just say, not a key thing, but trying to describe what your character is doing, I think, is very much the thing. So whether that be an in-person verbal response or it's someone going, my character is like notably disturbed by the sequences of events and you see them withdrawing into themselves, that's still role-playing. You're describing what your character's doing, how they're reacting. It doesn't have to be anything beyond that description.
And that's just as legitimate as, you know, saying, I feel this, and then acting that out at the table. There is no difference really in terms of, as long as you enjoy it, that's the thing that matters.
I mean, I'd always aim to encourage people to, well, I would say truly get into character in the sense of, you know, silly voicing, you know, changing your own voice is kind of neither here nor there, but maybe expanding on your thoughts. So you could say, I get into a deep discussion with the barman about various topics and we spend an hour chatting. Like, okay, fine. That's a great... If you can have 30 seconds of that with the DM of, you know, actually in character, I think that even better, but by no means a requirement at all.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the growth between, you know, my character goes up to the thug and threatens him for the information versus, you know, I pin the thug against the wall, I throttle him by the neck and I say, give me the information or I'll gut you like a fish.
Yeah.
Right? It's a small difference, but it really adds to flavour at the table.
Yeah, and I possibly mentioned this before as well in an Adventures League game that I played in and just had another playing saying, can I stealth? And I'm like, what actually does that mean?
If
you can give me some degree of hint as to what you're trying to do, it will just, for everyone's benefit, no, not just in terms of a mechanical sense, but in terms of living in that world. Okay, you're in a bar which is reasonably well lit. What do you mean by can I stealth? If you say to me, can I make sure that I find the darkest corner and if necessary, snuff out the nearest couple of candles just to give myself as deep a shade of cover as I possibly can? I want to go unnoticed while I keep my eyes on everyone in the bar. That totally changes everyone's vision of what you're doing. Because if you say to me, can I stealth? And I'm like, well, that either doesn't mean anything at all to me, or it means so many things, I don't know what you mean. So.
Plus, giving more, as you've just described there, Simon, gives the DM more chances to give you more attempts at a thing. So that could be a little dexterity check. You know, it could be a stealth check. It could be a lockpick check. It could be a number of things that the DM could roll into this overall attempt to be sneaky.
Yeah, gives you bonuses, might give you advantages or otherwise, you know, lots of options in there.
Absolutely.
And just creates more of a character. Because some people would stealth by other means. They would shove people out of the, you know, not, some people would say that's not stealthing, but like, if I want to take a certain position and I want people to not be there, I'll make them not be there.
My favorite alternative example of stealth is the idea of having like a chonky barbarian dude like trying to be sneaky and like walk through somewhere. The guard catches his eye, but he just sort of stares him down and does like a strength intimidation stealth check. Yeah. And the guard sort of looks away. And then just carries on walking.
I saw nothing.
This is not the day.
Yeah.
You can do a stealth check with your intimidation value or your strength value, you know, like
100%.
Good. So in general, how do you think your view on character development, character creation has changed since creating Walker all those years ago?
I am so much more character first now.
Almost character before mechanisms, would you say?
Pretty much, yeah. That's not to say I 100% disregard the character type I want to be.
Mm.
But I am much more flexible almost in what the character will be when I've worked out who they're going to be.
Mm.
So when we were in the early doors of setting up this new campaign, so Kev had sent out the message saying, I've half written a good few sessions probably worth of stuff for a new campaign. Who's interested? And here's some basic detail. And a couple of people in the group are like, oh, I want to play a rogue or a ranger. And someone else says, oh, well, we need a whatever. And
we I'm need like, a this, we need a that.
I'm yeah. like, yeah, but who do you want to play? I don't care what you want to play. I want to know who you are.
Mm.
Why are you there? What are you doing? What are your interests? Mm. What's your drive and motivation? And I've been constantly plugging away at our group like, yeah, but what's the reasoning? Why are you who you are?
Yeah, because from a DM's perspective, or at least from my perspective, I don't care if it's a full party of clerics or if it's a full party of rogues or wizards. I'm really not fussed about having a makeup of the party be perfect, because as a DM, I will make the encounters interesting anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely will somewhat be influenced by the DM. Some will play regardless and you almost need that. I think that's a bit more of an old school mentality, isn't it? Because
I have to have a fighter, a mage,
a thief.
Yeah, a thief, exactly.
Because I think that was much more of a key thing, because in older editions you were much more tied down to, well, only this person can use this. Like, it's fundamentally impossible for wizards to wield thieves' tools. They might, you know, in 5th edition, they can do it. They just might be terrible at it.
Exactly.
But in 2nd edition, they just couldn't hold the tool, it seems. I mean, I don't know enough about it to be 100% certain on that, but that seemed to be the way.
I think, in terms of general philosophy, I think both of us haven't really moved much on the idea that your character sheet shouldn't influence what your character does to much extent if your character would do the thing anyway.
Absolutely, yeah. You know that I'm a particular stickler for social engagement.
Yeah.
And if anyone ever says, what's your charisma score? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Are you having the conversation with the person?
Yeah.
Then you're having the conversation with the person.
Yeah.
Because I just can't help but picture the, you know, it's like 5 kids in the sweet shop. And they were like, and then you could talk. And then they just shove the like shiniest boy forward so he can talk to the shopkeeper. Like, the shopkeeper's going to look at the group of you and be, I mean, in my head, that's how I'd run it. Like, if you're in the shop, you're in the shop. If you want to have the conversation, have the conversation.
It stems somewhat through a fear of failure, right?
Yeah.
And I can understand it to some extent. But at the same time, we talked about this before. failure can breed stories.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, give yourself the best chance in a number of circumstances.
Yeah.
It absolutely makes sense. But
if your character does a thing, the character does a thing. I mean, I've got a at this point, legendarily stupid example of Mickey Knuckles.
we do love Mickey.
Yeah, like very low intelligence, very low charisma score, because he's just an idiot. But he is talkative. Very talkative, and that's funny, and that's what it will lead to situations sometimes, and you know, yeah, it's interesting, but it's never stopped me as that character talking to characters as the face, regardless of having a shitty charisma score, you know.
So, yeah, indeed, and
because Mickey is a talkative idiot.
Yeah, and I think that really is a key thing, and that should be your. I mean, I say it should. There's no should. D&D is a game of interpretation,
yeah,
and
do
what thou will. But for me, your party makeup should be people that would actually make sense doing things together for whatever reason.
Mm.
So I know you were wanting to discuss this as to the whys and wherefores of group dynamics in terms of actual character relationships, not skill makeup, not spell list and stabbing facility, but why is this rogue hanging out with this wizard who is best friends with a cleric and a barbarian?
We'll dig into that in some real detail in a minute, I think.
For me, that is what needs to make more sense than...
Do you have X amount of each particular class?
What can you do? Who's got an intimidation score of +8 and a perception of +11 by fifth level? Is that... Well, who makes sense to be adventuring in this city? Why are they going to... And it will vary by game and sensibility.
Mm.
For the one-shots we've done, we've had a disparate group of characters, and you know, it's almost funnier and more enjoyable for the ridiculousness thereof.
Yeah.
But for a new campaign, this new one that we're running with Kev, I was desperate to have some... A degree of sense, because for me, the degree of sense makes it more enjoyable. It's not just a random group of people. It really is not everyone knowing everyone from the start, but you know, you and I have made those connections, and we will then stem from there as at least having a degree of shared background.
Should we segue into that bit then? We'll go.
I've driven
you've
us
naturally,
there.
Naturally, you've driven us there, mate. So who am I to argue with you in the driving? So, okay, so let's talk a little bit about how we did that and what was different this time compared to the last time. So our friend Kev is going to be DMing this new campaign, starting from scratch. And he started off with a session zero, as every good DM should.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know if we did a... what I would now call a session zero when we started back in the day. We probably did a how does this work kind of thing, but...
We didn't. I think this was when I first got everyone together. The session zero was mostly via the Facebook group, just, you know, can we all play D&D, please?
Yeah.
And that was basically
slinging vague ideas and links around.
I mean, I've done other sort of shorter campaigns and one-shots and stuff like that since then where... Yeah, the session zero has been an intrinsic part of the build.
Yeah.
And it has been in this case, which is nice. So it got everyone together before the campaign starts to talk about the campaign and what the expectations are and the world. And I'd like to ask you, how did you approach coming to the session zero? And I'll contrast that with how I approach coming to the session zero as a character.
Yeah, that should be fairly interesting. So I know you definitely did something different than what I did.
Mm.
So yeah, ahead of time, DM had sent out some of the background settings and some quite intriguing little snippets of almost vignettes from a movie of...
Like a trailer of different scenes.
Like fade in to find a golden dragonborn staring across the dunes, whispering something to an unseen partner and such and such and such. And like, oh, this is...
Sounds
this
interesting.
It's given me a flavour of what... I mean, we don't know who any of these people are and how they might relate to any of our characters. But he gave us the setting, so we are not on the Sword Coast. Which amusingly then two of the characters immediately decided to set their characters as deriving from the Sword Coast. Bloody contrarians, honestly.
I know, mate.
So yeah, it gave us an idea of what kind of campaign it might be. So yeah, degrees of intrigue. There'll be a vast amount of exploring, both within and without of the city. Kev's done an increasingly good job, I think, of portraying a range of characters as NPCs and really making them feel quite realistic and driven for their own purposes rather than just, oh, it's the person you meet at the shop. Like, well, yeah, but that person at the shop goes home to a wife. And, you know, they've got a lot of background to them in and of themselves. It was an odd mix. As much as I've said, I'm not mechanic-driven, or necessarily, you know, things like species driven, or I've not played it. There was a degree of, I've never played a Dragonborn in all of the characters I've played, and I've never really played a cleric, certainly not in a campaign, maybe in a one shot. I think I played a Forge cleric, so that was kind of in my head, like, oh, that's an interesting mix. I've not really seen a Dragonborn cleric anywhere that I recall. So I wanted to give that a go. And there's options in the Tasha's Cauldron of Everything book that really caught my eye. And as much as we said, you don't need anything beyond the Player's Handbook, and I will stand by that forever, there are some cool new options out there.
When you've played a ton of D&D, you want some more D&D, yeah, right? And there is options to have more D&D.
But that was about as far as it went in terms of, I want this because mechanics.
Yeah, coming to the session.
The rest of it was like, okay, what story hook am I giving myself to get me into this? And it was the idea that generally I wasn't really a cleric. And in fact, it's gone so far as, I'm not going to start as a cleric. I'm starting as a level one fighter because I think that fits my existing character, in that he's a fairly rough and ready guy who's been working with a partner or manager as a part of a trade caravan for a good number of years. He's an older character, and they basically got absolutely demolished in a sandstorm as part of their trade route whilst fleeing a city for some reason that my character doesn't know, but his boss, who is now presumed dead, was like, we need to leave, let's get out of here. And I'm like, dude, there's a sandstorm. And he's like, no, we're going anyway. Crashed horrifically, and then for whatever reason, it might be derivative without me realizing, I survived this storm where my partner didn't and made it back to a city. And I have a feeling that it was some divine intervention. So I want to give myself the opportunity to explore what that means. A newfound faith, if you will, unwittingly, because it's not, unlike the real world where I'm 100% atheist and would deny any real explanation of a god that you might try and throw at me. The wonderful thing about D&D is,
The gods are real.
The gods are a known fact. And it's more a case of, which do you choose to follow rather than do you choose to believe in any of them?
Absolutely.
So as a Dragonborn, Bahamut is a thing. Yeah, the prime dragon is...
Boss dog.
They are there. But then finding a feeling that maybe it wasn't necessarily directly Bahamut, but perhaps a different god that has chosen me for something yet to be found. And I like having that idea that rather than knowing myself and my place in that kind of religion or sect or whatever, I'm like, I don't really know what this means.
Discovering the faith, you know.
And then kind of giving Kev as the DM a whole wealth of options to go, well, we can take this anywhere.
Yeah.
Your god is now deciding that this is your route, and the route can be anything. And that really spoke to me as a concept and an idea. It's like, I want to see how this works out.
Nice.
I like the idea of endurance. So whether that be through my deity or just general hardiness. So I've given them a pretty good constitution score. They were, you know, a fairly manual person, so I've given them a pretty decent strength score. And then the one caveat for kind of gamesmanship, they're going to be a cleric. They need a wisdom score.
Yeah, that's fair.
Those were my three higher scores. And we're all using point buy for this campaign, whereas the first campaign we all rolled our stats.
Rolled stats, mate.
Which has its pluses and minuses.
Yeah, it's both interesting and also it can create some weirdness. But it doesn't really matter, frankly. It all comes out in the wash. If you're interested in an optimized campaign, then that needs to be agreed in advance. And we say everyone's going to optimize and we're going to have a really high strategic, highly tactical game, blah, blah, blah. If you're interested in a high role-play game, then throw the statistics out the window because they don't fucking matter.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and if you've got somewhere in the middle, then point buy is probably a good option. So
yeah, I know I've said in previous episodes, I'm sure, that you don't need to be the most powerful thing of your type, but I totally understand that you don't want to also suck at your main thing.
So yeah, you're
give yourself a chance without it being like, oh no, I must get this score to 20 immediately or else there's no point in me playing. Like, it's going to be a difference of one or two here or there.
Yeah, and you'll know my personal preference is mostly for feats when it comes to ASIs. And I like feats because I like options more than I like just dice modifiers. And so, yeah, I'll get a more swingy success fail, which happens often, but I can do more stuff and that's cool too.
Yeah.
To add some flavor there. Yeah, so my approach coming into the Session Zero was quite different. I came in on a real blank slate. I had some ideas about who I might want to be in the world after Kev sent the stuff through. And it has the sort of Persian, Middle Eastern kind of vibe, the game area that we're in.
That's what I'm feeling from it, yeah.
Yeah, right. And, you know, ratified by Kev, you know, with the sort of more descriptions of the world. And I had a character who sort of was from that region in the past, in our original campaign, which Kev took over a few years ago, as a sort of dragonborn barbarian. And I had a cleric that I had in a campaign with Tom that I quite liked, this sort of blaster-like cleric, a very aggressive cleric. And I thought, I like these two things. But the idea didn't really occur to me to put them together until we got to the Session Zero. And I really wanted to create something from the ground up that felt like it lived in the world that was there. That was my overarching aim, is to not come with a fully fleshed out idea. Like, it was the last thing I wanted was to write something out, which I've done before, and bring an idea to the table. I wanted to come, hear the world, and then go, okay, that's going to inspire me in some way. And Kev's descriptions and his little teasers and when we got to the Session Zero and had the discussions really put the backbone behind what I wanted to do. And I was like, oh, that sounds great. I could do this and I could do this. And you're a Dragonborn? Great. Let's both be Dragonborns because that's the most common race in this world, right?
So, yeah, it's
in this area. So, or one of the more common races in the area. I was like, great, well, that's perfect. Why wouldn't there be, in a party of six adventurers, a couple of Dragonborn if Dragonborn are really common?
Exactly. Right?
So I thought, well, I'm going to be Dragonborn. That's number one, because that will make me grounded and part of the world.
Yeah, that was another key thing in my head, as opposed to where I've often, if not frequently, played kind of the stranger, the outlier, the from another place. I'm like, no. I want to know this place. I want to be so from here that it's in my blood.
Part of the cloth. Yeah.
Like, you, people would know me in the street almost. I don't want to be like well-known, but I'm not a stranger to everyone. Yeah. Like,
you have contacts, you know.
I want to go to another nearby city that I've traded with, and they're not like, wait, who are you, stranger? They're like, oh, you brought some friends with you this time. We don't know these people, but we know who you are.
Exactly that.
Because I think there's so much to explore in that, rather than everywhere I go going, what's this place? Where will I find that? Like, I'm pretty sure. And I think Kev will be open to this, is that we go somewhere and I'll say, you know, if I've established that I have some knowledge of it, well, I want to go and find that tea room.
Yeah, I want to go to the person I know in this particular area.
And it might be that they're not there, but I want to chuck out a name. I'm like, is Jamel around?
Yeah.
And people are like, no, he's not here at the moment. Can I help you? Like, why? Where do you know him from? Because to me, that feels much more realistic in my current understanding of how. And I think for you, you're saying you're kind of mashing together almost a couple of previous ideas. I think that's because those ideas live as real things in your head as much as they can.
Yes,
you're not just going, oh, I like doing a Dragonborn, I'll do a Dragonborn again. Like,
no.
Now, there's a culture behind there where I can find another Dragonborn from this
group
that would do something different to my other one.
Yeah, so for context behind that, Salazar Karajin was part of the El Shaddai. I created a whole like militaristic society for his character, and a whole caste or hierarchical system that this particular tribe or clan exist in. And it's, in my mind, it is real, right? And he is part of that. And so it's easy for me to then dip into that history because it's part of the same region that Kev has set this in.
Yeah.
So in my mind, this is already here. You know, it's part and parcel of where it is. So I can dip into that clan and be like, well, I can create ties with this existing character. I can become part of the fabric of the society, although not directly part of the town, have knowledge of the town, being a trade emissary and stuff like that. So that was interesting to me. As soon as Kev let us know where it was, I was like, great, I have stuff that I like and I'm close to because I've created it. And it allows me to dip back into that, which is fun and exciting.
I think it's really fun, yeah.
So there is that. And then the cleric side of it, one of literally my favourite character I've ever created in terms of mechanisms and playing was Easy Ghostwood, which is a light cleric.
It was great.
Thank you. For Tom's campaign that we played a lot in COVID times. And just a blaster, aggressive light cleric, which I had an absolute ball playing, not just from the RP perspective, which is fun.
He was so laid back and then monstrously damaging at the same time. It's amazing.
The worst healer.
It was like unwittingly destructive.
Yeah, right? Which is great. Real great fun to play that. But now I'm playing a much more, I suppose, focused version of that, I guess, which is going to be interesting. So a deliberate approach to the cleric power.
Mm.
And I suppose... we'll discover more about it together, about the philosophies of the characters and their approach to religion in the world. But I'm thinking he's very stoic and, you know, but also really has an interest in things like philosophy of war and philosophy of life and has deep questions which he wants to find answers to through his religion and through the art of war. And what does that mean? Is it always right to sacrifice the few for the many? Does honor mean anything when you're standing among the ashes of the dead? So these sort of big questions are important to him.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see, because on the face of it, we could be very similar to Dragonborn clerics, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Albeit you're light and I'm twilight,
which is really cool.
At least I will be. That's where I'm aiming for. I think the twilight cleric has some fantastic options. I latterly found out only post choosing it. I promise. It's renowned as like one of the most powerful subclasses in the game. It's like stonkingly powerful, apparently.
I like that it's light and twilight as well. That's real fun.
I think the crossover there and then the differences between us, I think it could be great. I've got a feeling that we'll be both, perhaps much like in life, very similar and then wildly different.
Yeah, quite.
In a number of different topics.
Yeah, it'd be
and
really
I'm really
fun to
curious
explore.
To see how well that'll
absolutely
pan out.
And I think let's move on to the next section that I've got here, which is after the session zero, it was very important for me and for you to create existing connections in the world. And this is something that I would recommend all players that listen to our podcast at least give a go. If you're starting a new campaign or a sort of a series of one shots or whatever it is, or a short campaign or whatever you're doing, a story arc, I sort of set me and Simon a target of 5 experiences or things that we've done together pre-campaign beginning.
Yeah, right. I was almost desperate to have
an existing
connection with at least one other character.
I ideally would have liked it with everybody, but it's difficult when everyone's got strong ideas about what they want to do and who they want to be.
Yeah, I think that's where it becomes tricky, is that... Yeah.
I came in with like a blank slate.
Yeah, up to a point, you can't have everyone knowing each other without it becoming... Let's spend 9 hours working out all of the connections. I think it's easier in smaller groups and then bring the smaller groups together and build those connections in game.
Or alternatively, you do a Matt Colville type thing where the session zero is the DM says, you're all part of this group. Work it out.
I mean, yeah, that's an alternative, and we've done that almost in like one shot. Like, you're an existing adventuring party. You've known each other for
20
X
years.
Amount of time.
Yeah, yeah. So, and what did we settle on? We settled on 5 things.
We did.
Right.
You want me to remember them?
We can try. if not, I'll remind you.
At the very least, as I say, my character has a burgeoning interest in the divine, which he's not entirely disregarded before, but has never felt like it's him. He's just a burly guy who's done stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's like, there's something happened that I need to explore. So one of the things we've been doing pre-game, so probably a month or two, is that we've been exploring the temples and
going to temple.
I've almost been like testing the waters of a few. So I've gone with you to yours for Tempus, the god of war. We've obviously gone to Bahamut, as you've done many times, but almost kind of just paying due deference and not much beyond that.
Yeah.
And then seeing what else has kind of clicked, which I think is really fun. It gives me a more naturalistic way, I feel, of thinking, well, I wasn't a cleric. Why do I now suddenly know how to cure wounds magically? Well,
absolutely.
I know it's a thing that can be done, but I don't know how to do it. And by spending time with you in character, albeit pre-game, well, now I'm getting an understanding of how you do it, how other clerics in other temples do it. So I'll probably be able to pull something off soon enough. But
like,
not
oh,
quite, yeah. I need to, you know, it'll almost be like, I don't know how long it'll take us to
unlock
to
that.
Level up, as it were.
Yeah,
I figure it'll
right.
be a session.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. So maybe even pre-officially turning level one cleric, I'm like, oh, I've made that work. I'm finding my feet. I've got a spell or a cantrip that'll do something pre-being a cleric. So like cleric 0.5.
Yeah, well, there we go. And it's, yeah, we talked about we go to temple at dawn for Tempest, the god of war, and at dusk to explore the twilight side of it. And that's what we've been doing in the sort of month or two leading up to the start of the campaign. And during that time in temple and around, we had discussed things like philosophy of war and life and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And those deeper questions. Because that will give us something to hang a hat on with RP, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Another thing that we do is, as you are starting as a fighter, and clerics are also roughy tufties.
typically, certainly your ones.
mine are typically with a shield and something to bash. We're level one, we're not heroes yet. Also important to note, before I continue, we're starting at level one. We ain't killed no dragons.
No, God no.
No. And so I think our experience is we've tried to make as grounded as possible.
Yeah, for me at a low level, I almost want to be like underwhelming.
Yeah,
as a starting character.
Yeah, kind of crap, right? Like talented, but learning.
You're slightly above the average townsfolk, but there's definitely people who can whoop your ass.
Yeah, plenty of people give you a whooping. And with that in mind, that's point number two, where we decided, well, we're training at the local martial dojo, martial training arena, in the things like the shield and the mace to keep fit, if anything else, right? Because yeah, there are some nefarious folks around and we want to keep fit and be strong for our day job, which we'll talk about as well. And as part of that, we're training heavily and we do some sparring and sometimes some minor local competition to test ourselves.
Indeed, yeah.
And we got our asses whooped through. And that, as you talked about, Simon, in our messaging, it creates a lot of character coming back from having your ass handed to you.
I think it, yeah, to not be flawless.
Yeah.
You know, we've kind of stepped away from, you know, the classic 5e character sheet of traits, bonds, ideals and flaws.
Yes.
But giving yourself a degree of flaw, as it were, like, yeah, I got my ass kicked. Of course I did.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing. I know how to handle myself to a point, but I'm going to...
There's people out there better than me.
Yeah.
And how do I deal with that?
Yeah, right? it gives you something to strive for. It gives you somewhere to develop from and into. It really gives you much more space, I think, than just, oh yeah, on my way here, I took out a displacer beast or two. Like, did you? Really?
Dang.
How?
Yeah, exactly.
How have you done that, yet you're still only, you know, what your character sheet says in that regard?
Yeah, quite. Yeah. And hey, look, if you want to start a level one campaign and say that you kill the dragon, fine. But for roleplay at least, maybe it's more fun that's a lie, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, I kill the dragon. And maybe over the course of the couple of levels since then, maybe people find out that it wasn't true and that makes it for a fun maybe experience. And it's just a thought. And on to the keeping fit and more to some more general stuff. What do we do when we're in town, right? We need to work.
Well, absolutely, yeah. As I said earlier, my guy, Silic, He's an older guy. I'm picturing him somewhere probably in his 50s.
Gyrus would be a bit younger, but yeah.
So he's led a life up to point. So it's almost like this potential new adventure that he might find himself on will almost come with as a bit of a surprise. You're like, oh, I wasn't expecting life to pick up almost, as it were, after what I thought might be the end of me. So he's been trading on these caravans, camel treks, or his previous boss had a small floating caravan. I like the idea of the caravanserai on the small, not an airship, not like the magical type ship, but literally like, this is hide inflated, potentially with a small degree of magic to help navigation. But, you know, it wasn't anything beyond a floating cart in a sense. So he's got a lot of history in like trade and goods and handling and so on. So my inclination, once that fell apart quite literally in a storm, is that he goes back to what he knows, which is dock work in whatever fashion, whether it be simple as loading, unloading, or maybe some supervising if he can find the position. And it allows him to keep that connection with the wider world if he himself is not traveling, slightly in the back of my head, maybe not traveling through fear or trepidation of another occurrence in the deserts, because those deserts are harsh, and the fact he got out of it alive is still quite a surprise to him. So he's like, well, I'm gonna keep to what I know for now.
Just like good honest work on the docks, load, unload, like I said, supervisory, minor, like, you know, security work, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and it gives us an opportunity to then cross over with other characters arriving in the city.
Absolutely.
Which I thought was a really handy little
It gives us
thing there.
Contacts, potential rumours, that sort of thing. Like you say, crossover with other characters, which is really, really useful. And which leads us to our next point is just other experiences that we would have potentially at work. And one that we thought about was maybe an altercation with one of the ne'er-do-wells of the large city that they're in. Because wherever you are, no matter where you live, there's nice places and there's shady places, there's nice people and there are con people. What would it be like for people of principle and conviction to witness something that offends those principles, that nature? And we came up with an idea where we see a family get conned and we go and right that wrong in a very minor level.
Yeah.
We go and get their stuff back.
Yeah, we need a degree of intervention. We're not acting as the heroes. I don't think either of us are, certainly at this point, going, we'll save the day. It's more like
we know.
It's more
this,
like we shouldn't let this stand. We feel like this is a thing we should be able to set right.
Yeah, we've seen this con before. You know, this shouldn't happen. You know, fuck off, do this somewhere else, you know, to the criminals. Like, don't do it around here. Which is interesting. So that's that little altercation. And on the theme of altercations, bar fight, because bar fights are fun.
Yeah, I like this idea that there is it's not necessarily a bad guy, but, and you know, I don't
there's
know.
People in the world you just don't get on with.
Yeah, you probably go to the pub more than I do, because I essentially don't go to the pub in the real world. I've gone to more pretend taverns than I've ever been in a real pub before. But you know that there's those groups of people that, if you have no interaction with them, they're just rowdy dumbasses somewhere nearby, but sometimes it just spills over and it gets a bit too close. And the instance I thought of was that our newfound friend, so another character in the party, has found us at the docks, I think we agreed upon, and joined in with some work and had some questions for me. He'd heard about the crash I was involved in and had some other interest. And was then chosen as the subject of a degree of bullying or intimidation attempt by this guy and his cronies, for want of a better word. Just a bit of a rumble,
bit of a roughy tofty,
bit of a rumble with Hezbollah in the local bar. It's in my head not much beyond just guy who's a bit aggy.
A minor scale scuffle, bar brawl, some furniture gets broken, then everyone chills out and has a drink afterwards, you know, like that sort of thing.
There's probably some low level seething background resentment which might blossom into, if nothing else, potentially an ongoing little callback for us.
Yeah,
he might crop up just to it's going to trip us up in our daily attempts to do stuff rather than be, I'm not looking to set him up as the next
big bad
lieutenant of the big bad, but
yeah, quite. But yeah, so it was five things. So going to temple, our day job, our intervention or our heroic moment, our defending ourselves moment as well. And
then just our regular our training, which all leads into, most of the other bits.
Yeah, exactly that. So, and I think that's the big takeaway, I think, for players. At least in my changes in terms of how I approach character now, I think that sort of five bullet points with other character at least will really help ground you into the world. And I already feel like the character is part of the world, you know. So
yeah, I really do. I'm so looking forward to finding out what the other guys have worked out. If they have, we did encourage them to, both Pete and Rick, for their own reasons and devices, decided that their characters had actually come from the Sword Coast of all things.
Mm.
With this campaign now for the first time being not on the Sword Coast. They'd individually come up with interesting backgrounds for their characters, which I think was great. Rick particularly, I'm looking forward to seeing how he's going to flesh that character out as a noble with some, not necessarily shady background, but definitely not necessarily living up to the family name.
Mm.
Turns out he does know Pete's character from various higher class social events. Both finding themselves long way from home in an unknown place, and how they're going to interact with everyone else, us included, as much more down-to-earth folk. Mm. I see us as versus them.
Yeah, absolutely. Sort of,
So yeah, curious to see how they work out any interactions between themselves, what kind of history and precedents they've set between each other, and then how Ben and Cy mix in with all of that.
Mm.
Ben almost as the outlier, as always, playing a mute Goliath monk.
I love it, mate.
He's
always so imaginative. And,
it's so inventive.
Yeah, imaginative and inventive, that's the word. And, it just goes to show you can do anything in this game, and you should do anything.
There's so much room for both comedic and potentially very deep conversation there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that, beyond whatever the hell Kev throws at us, monsters and beyond, I assume there'll be some political intrigue in there. There's talk of factions and guilds and dukedoms and potentially warring factions somewhere in the
some political
the
intrigue. So, I've got one more question for you before we wrap up, at least. How do you feel like you might approach this as a player compared to prior campaigns and prior games that you've played, one-shots, Adventurers League? Is there anything that you're going to do differently this time in this series of games that you haven't done before, or things that you've learned from past games that you're going to implement this time?
I think for one, I'm going to aim to be a lot more proactive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm known as the note taker of our group. Mm-hmm. And whilst I'm not necessarily passive, I wouldn't necessarily be the one that leads the way. I think, for better or worse, Silic is going to have a confidence there through just general life experience that some of the others he might feel don't have. And obviously this will pan out differently depending on how the others play their characters.
Mm.
But yeah, as we said, stepping in when we see wrongdoing.
Mm.
Whereas some of my other characters, Walker particularly, was kind of neutral. It was like, life is life.
Sorry for you,
but that's not really my concern.
Yeah.
This would very much be more, I'm almost looking out for the wrongdoing around him and affecting as much as he can in a positive action.
That would be really interesting to see that play out. And I like the idea of the proactive side of it. I think I will typically be, I've always been quite an action pushing player, and that's just part of my personality. I think it's hard for me to shake that off.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair enough. I think, well, it's not necessarily an instigator, but you definitely push the action and the story forward, and I think that's perfectly laudable.
So I will probably be a little bit of that, but I think I'm going to try and fall somewhere in the extremes, because I've either been really, like, maybe stupidly charismatic stupid but charismatic characters, mm-hmm. or very, very stoic, serious characters, right?
Yeah. They're
like, angrily stoic characters, and not really much in the middle. So I think with Cyrus, it's going to be somewhere in the center. And, you know, and really think about the philosophy side of it, I think, is going to be a really interesting approach to my role play, which is what I might try and dig in.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, sort of the big questions about why are we doing this?
And again, that's why having some background with each other lends itself to better role play, because I know better than that of you in certain sense. Obviously, it'll be up to you still to play the character how you want to play the character. But if I feel like there's a prompt I can give you to say, are you sure that's how you're really reacting to it?
Mm.
Simply because I feel like, as much as I would in real life, if I think you're being a dumbass about something, I'm like,
you're being a dumbass.
Is this really you, or is this the drink, or, this a passing emotion kind of thing?
Not that I'm a drunkard, by the way.
No, very much a character moment, not a Wayne moment. And as I have been, I think, much more over the past 18 months probably, I'm going to try as much as I can to prompt the others, the less characterful, if we'll say, to really kind of get into character more, and rather than it being the mechanics even in terms of the combat role play, I really enjoy combat role play. That is to say,
describing what you are
doing.
It
gets to my turn, I'm going to meet him. All right, but how? Give me some flavor. Because, it's not for everyone, but it's a good proportion of the game. It's like, how does it work? How does your character act during all aspects? How do they act in combat? Are they just casually jaunting 30 feet? Or is it a mad dash sprint? For me, this will be particularly specific to me, perhaps, but if I get knocked out, I might get magically brought back, but I ain't going to feel right.
Mm.
I really like that idea. Not necessarily to take a level of exhaustion if you're brought back from zero hit points with a magical spell. But and you don't even need to penalize the character mechanically, but play into it. Have an idea of you've been unconscious for a number of seconds at the very least. Work out how that feels.
Well, you can play into the dice roll as the role play, right? So if you've just been knocked out and you come back and you roll a crit, you're like, well, obviously the magic has snapped me awake, and as an instinct, bam! And it was just blood rush. I got into the zone and hit the target. Or if you roll a one, obviously you've been groggy as you've got up and it didn't quite take effect properly and you're still trying to get your energy. There's ways that you can use the dice to your advantage in that way as well.
And as much as you might feel the game demands, I'm back up, so I must take my full, most optimized action, right? I just got knocked out. I'm going to run and hide for a second, get my bearings, and then maybe after a turn. And don't feel like it's a wasted turn. It's a roleplay opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just work out what's going on. Just get up and take the dodge action. Don't move. Just defend yourself for a turn. I think that's fantastic. Dodge is such an underused thing, really.
Dodge is amazing. I think also it's important to make sure that you have aligned on the type of game. We had a good, honest discussion about the type of game that we want to play, right, as a group. And I think we all decided we don't want to do this sort of thing and we would like to do more of this sort of thing. And that's important. If your game is going to be highly, on the battle top, kind of like battle tabletop with, the tactical combat then and optimized movement and attacking, then that's what you play and the role play becomes a smaller part. If your group is going to be, like I said, more roleplay dependent, then you worry less about the tactics and you build into the flavor. And we're falling somewhere in the middle, but I think we definitely agreed that we want less discussions about breakfast and more general social engagement, and also more moves to sort of more dungeony or bigger encounters, right?
I really, really like the roleplay in terms of I could go a whole session and not need to roll a dice if the situation means that it's just in character conversation, but I know that's not for the whole group.
I like some dice chucking.
I'm equally happy. You've heard about a thing off 40 miles from the city.
Yeah.
Next three sessions, you're going to find it, or at least die trying. Like, cool, I'm well down for not talking outside of the group and just dealing with shit.
Absolutely.
I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
And one of the things that stuck out to me as well, which I totally aligned with and Kev said, is that your actions have impact beyond the group. And it should impact the group as well. You know, we've just killed this. Like, how does that make you feel? Like,
What's the consequences in the game world?
There's evidence of the renown that you gain. There's discussion and fervor around the fact that somebody's done something. I can't speak to any specifics, so I don't know what's going to happen, but there'll be lasting impacts. You know, we'll become known, or we'll become renowned, or we'll become wanted, or someone will be found out. I think one of the characters is, if not necessarily strictly in hiding, maybe trying to keep themselves on the down low. And I'm curious to see how that will combine with you start doing cool things that are of note in a city. Someone's going to find out about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
They'll come looking for you, potentially. Absolutely. For good or bad, don't know. I'm well up for both sides.
Quite right. And Kev is going to bring it. He's an excellent DM that seems to learn more each time and keeps delivering for us. So very, very excited about the game. So let's round up a couple of our takeaways from our discussion today before we bring it to the outro. Number one, we still believe in the importance of the session zero as being essential to the campaign, I think.
For any long-standing campaign or arc that's going to be more than a couple of sessions, I think it's crucial to work out what everyone wants from it.
Yep, and in the session zero, I think it's important for all the characters to try and become part of the game world in some way and create a grounding to the world, really be open to the DM's concept and try and build within that concept. Thirdly, create connections to your fellow characters in advance of the game. I mean, I like the idea of this sort of 5 bullet points. Doesn't have to be huge. We literally have 5 little paragraphs, and that's plenty for us to then build on and roleplay in the game world, which is loads.
Yeah, I suppose you don't even need to finalize it as much as we are. But
no,
just
you don't
having
even have
a, to. A 10 an minute, idea. A 10-minute conversation, like, what do you think you do generally? And what do you think I'll do generally? Okay, yeah, that'll tie up. But find those mental ties in some fashion or other. Definitely a thing.
Absolutely. Any other thoughts, Simon, before we wrap this up?
As I said, I think my main change since first game to now over those 4 years is work out who you want to play.
Who do you want to be?
Who they are, in the world and what they're looking to achieve. And then work out the kind of, they'll achieve that by means of being
this thing. Yes, I think that's great advice. Who and then what? Thanks for listening to Bored Stupid. Subscribe to us to get future episodes of the show delivered directly to your ear holes via your favourite podcast service. You can find us all over the internet, except on OnlyFans. And especially at the moment, with more and more content, we're going to be adding to our YouTube channel, and you'll see a bunch of our industry interviews, which we'll get a ton more of at the UK Games Expo this year, which is coming up very, very soon.
Well hyped.
Yep, it gets quicker and quicker each time we get, or closer and closer each time we talk about it. Find and subscribe to us wherever you can find us by looking for Bored Stupid, spelled B-O-A-R-D. If you've got any feedback, comments or questions, let us know. Otherwise, we'll catch you again real soon.